Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Stroke is the third leading cause of death in California and kills about 240,000 Americans each year, according to the CDC. Many people are unaware that increased risk of stroke can be due to a heart condition called atrial fibrillation, or AFib, which is a quivering or irregular heartbeat. Some people who have AFib don't even know that they have it. And on the phone with me for this segment, I have Dr. Joshua Leichman. He's an electrophysiologist with the Heart Rhythm Center of Temecula. Thank you for joining me today, Doctor. I appreciate the time.
Thank you, Stephen.
Now, first of all, before we get started, why don't you tell us a little bit about your background?
So I'm a cardiologist, and I specialize in the rhythm abnormalities of the heart. So I take care of patients who have fast rhythms or slow rhythms, and we have different treatment mechanisms for these types of rhythm abnormalities. I was trained at Cedars-Sinai in Los Angeles for electrophysiology, which is the name of my specialty, and I've been in practice for 8 years now.
Okay, now we're going to be talking about stroke and AFib. What exactly is a stroke and how is it related to the heart?
So a stroke is basically the sudden death of brain cells, and it's usually secondary to a blockage in an artery that's going into the brain. Sometimes it can be a rupture of the artery. Where it's related to the heart is important because it sometimes is related to clot coming out of the heart and going into the brain. And that clot can cause a blockage in the arteries, and that blockage can last for a few seconds, or it can last for a few minutes, or be permanent. And that's what can cause damage to the brain. That damage can cause things like the inability to talk, or move a certain part of your body, or even be able to see or recognize people. So it's a very important thing to recognize early, because treatment's going to be very important early on in terms of making the stroke stop and then figuring out why somebody had a stroke.
Now, what is atrial fibrillation, also known as AFib, and how can it lead to stroke?
So atrial fibrillation is a very fast rhythm in the top chambers of the heart. It's a disorganized rhythm, because there are other fast rhythms that are more organized, but atrial fibrillation is incredibly fast, and the way it leads to stroke is that the top chambers become so disorganized that the blood doesn't move well. And when it doesn't move well in the top chambers, it can get stagnant, and it can form a clot. That clot sometimes gets lodged in certain parts of the heart, and sometimes it can flick off and go into the brain. And that then leads to stroke. So that's why atrial fibrillation in itself is a risk for stroke.
Okay, tell us about some of the tools that can help patients and physicians detect AFib.
So AFib is a diagnosis that's generally made. It can be made clinically, where we listen to the heart and say, hey, that's irregular. But we have to have some tool to say, well, is it AFib or is it some other irregular rhythm? The main tool that we have is just the electrocardiogram, where we put leads on the outside of the chest, and we say, okay, let's take a look, and it'll tell us if the patient is in atrial fibrillation. There are other tools when you're not always in AFib. And so those tools become important for diagnosing AFib when patients may have no symptoms, when patients have intermittent episodes. And the main tool that I use in my practice is called the Zio Patch by iRhythm. And it's basically, we call it ambulatory monitoring. And what it is a small patch that actually records the heart rhythm all the time. And it's a small patch with a little button in the middle that if the patient does have symptoms, they can press on that and they can let us know they have symptoms, and it records everything. So it gets information prior to the symptoms, information during the symptoms, and a little bit after. But it's always recording, so you're not going to miss any rhythms. But more importantly, if they don't have symptoms, we should be able to catch atrial fibrillation if they have it during the time that they wear the patch. The patch is can be worn anywhere from 3 to 14 days. So it's sort of medium to long-term monitoring for atrial fibrillation.
Now, how does that differ from, say, like the Apple Watch or other consumer devices?
So you know, I don't know much about the Apple Watch, but my understanding about some of these other devices and the products that may be coming out is they're short-term monitoring. They may catch a snippet of what's going on, and I think that is helpful if patients have symptoms or concerns about a rhythm, but it doesn't tell the whole story, whereas an ECG or longer-term monitoring might tell a better story. And so I think those technologies, as they come out and become better, certainly are going to be useful for patients to sort of help them decide if they're going to seek medical advice to figure out do they need something else other than monitoring on their watches or phones. I think, you know, the technology is probably pretty good, but I think the issue is having a physician do appropriate monitoring and have the data that they need in order to make that diagnosis is going to be important. So I think it's probably a useful adjunctive tool, if you will.
Okay, now if someone has, if they are diagnosed with AFib, what are their options?
So there are a lot of different options for AFib. I think, you know, the big thing that, you know, we started talking about is stroke. And I think the thing we have to recognize and is probably relatively undertreated is preventing stroke from happening in patients. And part of the problem is we don't always know patients are in AFib. Part of the problem is they don't feel it. And so if somebody doesn't feel it, it's very hard to know that it's there. But if we know they have AFib, I think if they have certain risk factors, and they have to discuss this with their doctor, that what are the risk factors, and some of them may be, is the heart weak? Do they have high blood pressure, diabetes? What is their age? Have they had a stroke before? Some of those factors need to be taken into account before medications are prescribed to prevent stroke. And those medications are important. They're blood-thinning medications, and they're very important for preventing stroke. And there are different types out there, and clearly you'd have to talk with your physician about which is the best for you to be used and how that'll have to be monitored. So I think that's the very first thing, that if somebody knows they have AFib, it's stroke prevention, making sure that if there are risk factors, that medications are given to prevent stroke. Outside of that, if patients have symptoms, then there are medications, other medications, and procedures that patients can undergo to either suppress the atrial fibrillation, to have the atrial fibrillation stop. And there are even procedures that I do where we take catheters into the heart and we ablate tissue, meaning we alter the tissue in the top chambers of the heart to prevent atrial fibrillation from happening. That's called cardiac ablation. But all of these things have to be discussed with your physician and figure out what is best for you and how bad are your symptoms and what are the other things that, you know, may need to be done prior to initiating medication or even going for a complex procedure.
Is AFib something that can be cured, or once you have it, you've got it for life?
Well, we'd love to think that we can cure it. And there are some people that we either give medications to or do ablation, and they may never have AFib again, and that's great. And then there are some people we think, oh, well, we should be able to do this and do it once, and they have recurrence of AFib. And I think we don't understand everything about AFib yet in terms of its treatment and why it happens and how it continues to happen. I think there are a lot of things that we are still learning about atrial fibrillation. I am hesitant to say that we can always cure atrial fibrillation. I think it's always, everybody's a little bit different. Every patient is an individual and has to be treated as such, and discussions have to be had with those patients about what is it about your AFib, what is it about your heart that puts you into AFib, or the other risk factors that put you into AFib that need to be treated in order to help cure atrial fibrillation.
You mentioned earlier that patients may not exhibit any symptoms of AFib, but can there be any symptoms?
Yeah, so there are, and some people have symptoms. The symptoms are usually if the heart is going fast. As I said at the beginning, AFib is incredibly fast. You know, if you were to measure the signals in the top chamber, they're somewhere between 400 and 600 beats a minute. But clearly the bottom chamber of the heart, which is what people feel when the heart's going fast, can't go that fast. But it could go 200 beats a minute or 150 beats a minute, and it's irregular, and it's much faster than people will want it to be for whatever activity they're doing. And so they may feel palpitations, like a flip-flopping of the heart. They might feel that they're short of breath or tired, or they may have what we call exertional dyspnea, or shortness of breath with activity, exercise intolerance. And some people may even develop chest pain and lightheadedness. There are a myriad of symptoms, and everybody's symptoms may be unique, but there definitely are symptoms that are associated with atrial fibrillation.
Okay, now what questions should a patient ask their doctor to determine if they are at risk of a stroke?
So The important, if you have AFib, the important conditions that need to be known and treated are things like, is the heart weak? Do you have what we call congestive heart failure? That needs to be treated. That's a risk factor for stroke. Is the blood pressure high? Are you on medications? And that's a risk factor for stroke. There are varying ages that we have cutoffs for stroke in women and men that are predict a higher risk at certain ages. And so, you know, if you're greater than 65 or greater than 75, it just depends on, again, if you're a man or a woman, based on the algorithms we use, you have a higher risk for stroke. Things like diabetes and even having a previous stroke. And that's where certainly the Zio patch, where I think can be very useful, that if we don't know why you had a stroke and we don't see AFib immediately, that is a very helpful tool, because then we can monitor you and say, well, hey, this stroke was from AFib, because it means a different treatment strategy. And it does mean that you have to be on that treatment strategy for life if you do have AFib and have had a stroke. And then the last risk factor is what we call vascular disease. Disease in the arteries of the legs or the arms, or even disease in the arteries of the heart, is an important risk factor for stroke. And these things need to be determined by your doctor, a cardiologist, and a discussion needs to be had with your physician about what is the best treatment for you. And you know, because it's a blood thinner, there is risk for bleeding. You have to weigh those risks of bleeding versus the risk of stroke. And strokes are devastating. I mean, they really do alter people's lives. People can't talk or walk or feed themselves, and they don't just affect the individual who had the stroke. They affect the family members who have to take care of these people after stroke. So I think it's very important that we address these issues relatively aggressively.
Now, you talk about cardiac monitoring. Why is continuous cardiac monitoring so important?
Well, I think, you know, we talked a little bit about, hey, if we have an Apple Watch, we get something for, you know, 30 seconds. And you might get anything. And so the issue is to be able to catch something all the time. And what the monitoring allows people to do is do their regular activities. Certainly with the Zio patch, there's no wires or there's no box that you have to wear. It's just a little patch that you wear in the upper left shoulder area over the chest. And, you know, if you're wearing a shirt, nobody would know that it was even there. And you do everything you normally would do, and you can sleep with it, you shower with it, and it gives you loads of information over a long period of time so that you don't miss anything. Because the problem with a watch is if you're not near the watch or you're not near the phone and you have the symptoms, well, you'll miss it. So I think that's where the continuous monitoring is very important, and you can go up to 14 days. Now, if we don't catch things in that period of time, there are other monitors that are a little more invasive that we can insert under the skin and have monitoring that can last for upwards of 3 years, and we certainly do that here at the Heart Rhythm Center of Temecula as well. And that's called a loop recorder, and sort of a slightly different technology, but it's the same idea of we need to monitor for long periods of time to know, is something happening? Because not everything happens in a certain amount of time that that we'd expect, and to have long-term monitoring is very helpful.
Okay, as we wrap things up, is there one particular point you'd like to make that people should know about AFib?
I think, for me, the important thing is the protection for stroke. We can, especially given that a majority of our patients are probably going to be asymptomatic, and stroke can be very devastating. And I think doing our best to identify those patients who have AFib and have enough risk is a very important thing that we need to be doing. We certainly want to treat patients with symptoms, and we want to be aggressive about that. But ultimately, if we don't prevent stroke, then we're not really doing a good job for the treatment of atrial fibrillation and those patients.
Okay, doctor, and where can people go to get more information about AFib?
Well, for AFib, speaking to your physician or coming to see me at the Heart Rhythm Center of Temecula, I think finding information about monitoring certainly can be done at the iRhythm website, which is www.irhythmtech.com. That's IRHYTHMTECH.com. Talking to your physician, I think, is very important if you have concerns about AFib and monitoring and your risk for stroke. And that's the first place you need to go.
Okay, Dr. Joshua Leichman, a cardiologist with the Heart Rhythm Center of Temecula. Thanks once again for joining me today.
Thank you, Stephen. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.